Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 75 for September 19th, 2008. Paul Amok. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by Visa. We all have things we like to think about. Online fraud shouldn't be one of them. Because with every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. And by GoToMyPC, wherever you go, access your PC and all your files, programs, and email remotely with GoToMyPC. For a free trial of this award-winning service, visit GoToMyPC.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, episode 75. We're three-quarters of a century old, Paul Thurrott.
And what's our Wii Fit age?
Hey, do you play that game? Yeah, I don't play Wii Fit.
I bought one. I bought one when I was in Seattle. I had it shipped home. So for that shining five-minute moment, I was the greatest father in the world. And now I have never seen
Daddy, Daddy,
again.
Daddy, Wii Fit.
But I did note it. I've not tried it myself. I sat there for a little while. My wife played with it for a little while.
Do they have Wii Ain't Fit? Because that's really the one I need.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Well, that's, I think, what the theme really is.
It don't fit.
But it gives you a Wii Fit age. And my son, you know, misconstruing what this was very pleased to discover that his age was, in fact, 43.
He wants to be older. But what he really is, he's like heart attack. He's a heart attack waiting to happen.
It actually said something like, "You don't seem very coordinated. Do you trip a lot when you walk?"
That's so mean.
Which I thought was, I said, "Yeah, he does. That's exactly
mean.
Right.
Mean. Oh, my God. How mean can you get?"
I thought it was funny.
That's very funny. We're going to talk about, we've got a Zune. I've been watching you on Twitter, so I know what you're up to in your life. I know about Windows 7. I know about Zune 3. We're going to talk about these things and many more in just a bit. Live Wave 3, you're syncing up even as we speak.
I am syncing, and I got to stop doing this. I'm syncing fast, Leo.
Fast syncing. Fast. But before we talk about all that.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm sure you have some hate mail for me about the Seinfeld commercial. But before we talk about that.
Jeez. I felt like we bickered a little bit.
Oh, we disagreed, but that's perfectly okay for a sensible, rational people to disagree.
I think so.
We don't have to agree on everything. And
this is one of my life lessons. Yes. Yeah, this is a maturity moment. I said this to my wife years ago that, you know, we don't have to agree.
Of course not. In fact, life would be boring.
That's fine. Yeah, I respect your opinion.
You're full of it. You're an idiot.
You're uneducated and silly, but it's okay.
Life would be boring if we all agreed.
Yeah.
But before we talk about that, let me talk about GoToMyPC. I heard some rumors. I don't know if this is true. I probably should even mention this in the ad. But there was a rumor that Citrix might be acquired by Microsoft. I don't know if that's true. I can understand why people would say that, though.
Yeah.
Are you going to agree?
Citrix no, I don't know anything about it, but Citrix is a very unique example of a company that went up against Microsoft, has continued doing what they do. They sell this product that's, let's face it, very, very much like what Microsoft does, and they're still around.
And it's better. That's why.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, you have to wonder, there's a... there aren't very many examples of companies like this that have been ever able to go, you know, stand up to them and say, "Hey, look, we're always going to have this value out over what you do. Deal with it." And Microsoft just kind of dealt with it.
And they're kind of in bed together. They license the Citrix.
Well, that's what I mean. But, you know, but also you notice, unlike with other products, Microsoft hasn't come out and just duplicated everything. They actually have maintained this sort of subset of Citrix functionality.
Right. So if you want the full deal, GoToMyPC.com is the place to go. I mean, this is the remote access program. The newest version is so much faster. It's always been the easiest to set up. It is simple to, you don't have to worry about firewalls. You don't have to worry about port forwarding or universal plug and play, because they use a very clever technique using a central server that means that you don't have any of this configuration issue at all. It's an award-winning, I mean, won the PC World's World-Class Award for Best Remote Access Software. Setup is easy, it's fast, and well, I should explain that what it lets you do is you install it on a computer, typically your office computer, and now wherever you go, anywhere you can get online, even on a Mac, you can log into your Windows machine at work, and there's your screen, just like you're there. Secure, by the way, SSL secure, encrypted. You could send and receive email, you can run programs, you can access network resources, you can run video, it's that fast. You can go to YouTube on your office computer and watch it on this remote connection. It's amazing. And you can even drag and drop files from one machine to the other. It's the ultimate in easy, secure remote access. And now it's free for you when you go to gotomypc.com/windows. Not free forever. Even I cannot do that. But we'll give it to you for a free trial. I think unlimited use for a month. I'm not sure. Check it. gotomypc.com/windows. gotomypc.com/windows. Give GoToMyPC a try. You'll see why all the world uses GoToMyPC. So I saw in your tweet, I like this. You said Windows 7, but not if it's in 2009, it's really Windows Vista Second Edition. R2. Yeah, R2. Yeah. But it's not. You don't think it's going to be that soon.
I don't, but a lot of people do. I mean, I would just reserve. I think so. Let's reserve judgment until PDC happens or Microsoft says otherwise. But you know, I think I mentioned this last week. You know, I talked to a bunch of guys on and off the record last week, and I never heard anything in like 2009. So that doesn't mean it's not. It couldn't happen. It just.
Did you hear 2010, or you just didn't hear anything?
I did. Yeah.
So that's probably, I mean, that makes sense.
It makes sense, but.
That would be, let's see, 3 years into Vista.
Hey, this is Microsoft, Leo. It doesn't have to make sense. In fact, it often makes more sense when it doesn't make sense.
I think they should just say, and I'm sure they are, it's done when it's done.
Yeah. Although I find companies that do that to be very annoying.
Yeah, I know. It's a little arrogant. You know, well, and you can't do it if you're, I don't think you can do it. If you're Microsoft, because, and you explain this to me, they've got to give business fair warning.
Right.
And ISVs and everybody. There's a whole ecosystem.
Being Microsoft in some ways, right? You know, they have to be so careful and so measured and so, you know, but that goes back to that discussion we had, you know, why I believe that they should be splitting out the consumer and the business versions. You know, consumers would hate to see something called Windows Vista Second Edition, right? That would be the kiss of death for this product in the market. But businesses, that's exactly what they want to see.
Right.
And I just think they would be better served by just separating those things out and being done with it. But obviously, I don't run the show, so it doesn't really matter.
Right? You know, I have to say, I used to be one of those guys who was, you know, it's very easy for me to rag on Microsoft. Mm-hmm. But as I understand them better, and I think a lot of this comes from talking to you, I realize the challenges they have. They have a lot of different constituencies they have to serve. Even within Microsoft, there are constituencies.
Sure.
You can't, you know, you've got many teams, and you can't just say, no, it's going to be this way. Maybe Bill Gates could, but, you know, I don't think even Bill could do that.
The big company, they serve many masters.
Right.
You know, and it's difficult. I mean, you know, from an enthusiast point of view, I would say if you love technology like we do, you know, they're a hard company to kind of love, aren't they? I mean, they're all over the map.
Right.
But, you know, and I think that's why, you know, Apple is an easier target for people. You know, it's like, oh yeah, look at them. They're very laser focused on a couple of different things. It's very easy to kind of rally around that. But as we've seen this year, when Apple overreaches sometimes, they're running into some of the same issues now that Microsoft has had for a while, you know, where, you know, your product's being used by a lot of people. They have a lot of different kinds of PCs and lots of different kinds of problems. And, you know, it's a different world. So.
So what do we know about 7? Did they tell you? Did they show you?
No,
there are screenshots floating around. Yes.
There are screenshots floating around. There are more floating around than what we've seen on the web, but I suspect that will change over time. But some of the stuff we've seen that's really interesting is, you know, we know that the Office folks, the people behind the Ribbon UI in the previous version of Microsoft Office, are now working on the Windows the Windows 7 user interface. And I think a lot of people took that to mean that we're going to see some sort of Ribbon UI in Windows Explorer, for example. That would be the obvious target. And, you know, maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't. I frankly hope it doesn't. I don't really... I've tried to think through what that could look like, and I don't think a multi-tab, you know, type of UI is what, you know, makes sense for Explorer. But some of the screenshots we've seen are applications that are included with Windows, like Paint or WordPad, things like that, where there's a Ribbon UI on those applications. And that actually, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, yeah, that makes some sense. So, yeah, I think the build that we're seeing floating around is, you know, the build up to the build we're going to get at PDC next month.
Right. Oh, so there will be a build. I guess there has to be a PDC, huh? They have to show something.
Yeah. And then there were rumors. Now, I didn't hear anything about this, but I think Mary Jo Foley published an article saying that Microsoft plans to ship the first beta version of Windows 7 by the end of the year as well. So this PDC build, I don't believe, is aimed at, you know, beta 1. I think it's a pre-beta, but it's supposed to be really solid. I've heard that's the one thing I've heard from a wide number of people, that you're going to be surprised by how good this thing is. And, you know, the shots I've seen, it looks like Vista. You know, there are a couple of interesting additions, but the basics are, you know, it's Vista. And that may or may not excite you, I guess, depending on how you look at Vista.
It's
also the first. This is the first external beta. You know, you can go back to any.
It can't be Vista.
For this,
it has to be Vista and.
Sure.
But what's the and?
Well, right now it's not meaningful right now, because a lot of the and is that stuff that, you know, they're working on the basic technologies that will sort of form the platform that is Windows 7. So they're showing that to you in a UI that is essentially Windows Vista. But that's always the case, right? With the first beta, the first external pre-release version, you know, it looks like the old one. That's how it starts. You know, hopefully when all is said and done, this thing will look somewhat unique. But, you know, as of today, it's an evolutionary update to Windows Vista, which, yeah, you know, many people, myself included, believe that that's what this thing will be, sure, when all is said and done.
But now you're talking about UI only.
UI, functional, sure, everything.
So, well, come on. I mean, they can't just put out... Okay, I got to understand the UI will have something new, maybe. Maybe not.
Well, okay.
But they've got to put something under the hood that's new. Otherwise, why would you buy it?
Right. Because it's new and shiny and it's fun. It has a new name.
I tell you, this is a problem that Apple faces.
Look at the monkey, Leo. Look at the monkey.
Every company, these are mature operating systems. Yes. They it's hard to think of something new. And when they do, yep, things like, say, the database file system that they tried to put into Longhorn, it's so revolutionary that they have to pull back and say, well, we can't really do that because it's going to leave
customers
behind. Absolutely.
And that's an example I use again and again, because I'd have to go back and really think about how long ago this was. But I want to say 3 years before Windows Vista shipped, I started working on what would become the Windows Vista secrets book. And the first chapter I wrote was the one on the file system. And back at that time period, WinFS was still in the OS.
That's mean of me to
there
laugh.
There weren't going
to
be no physical folders for all of the special shell folders. Those were all going to be search folders, like smart folders, virtual folders. And this was so confusing to people. You know, here's Microsoft trying to do something truly revolutionary.
And by the way, a big improvement.
Absolutely.
Not merely cosmetic, but this would have made the file system much more robust.
No, this has ramifications that would have been felt far, far beyond Windows Vista. Right. This would have affected everything going forward. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, the people who beta test Windows, we would have to assume they're more technical than the average user. But these guys were fumbling all over this thing. They couldn't stand it. And they basically scaled it back until, you know, if you look at Windows Vista today, with regards to the special shell folders like documents, pictures, music, and so on, they work just like they're folders. They work just like they did in XP. And this virtual folder thing, it's still in Vista, but it's so hidden, it may as well not even be in there.
Well, even in XP, they weren't really folders. They were magical, well, magical entities.
They're not that magic. I mean, they're still folders that have a specific location in the file system. They have special attributes,
right?
But they're still a physical location,
right?
You know,
right.
If you open your documents folder, your My Documents folder in XP, it's going to be in, you know, C users Paul documents, right, by default on Vista.
Right.
You know, before it should never have mattered. It would never have mattered. You know, you could have had documents all over the place.
There must be somewhere inside Microsoft a Skunkworks project that has been told, don't consider legacy, don't consider vendors, don't consider customers. Let's rethink the whole thing.
Well, I think there are, in fact, many Skunkworks projects in Microsoft doing just that. But I also think we're at the point now where, you know, you have to understand, if Microsoft came to the market next year and said, okay, we're going to ship Windows 7, it's going to be just like Windows, and there'll be a Windows 8 and probably a Windows 9, and you don't have to worry about that. But over here on the side, we have this other thing. It's completely different. It's been written from the ground up to take advantage of multiprocessors, you know, yada, yada, yada. You might as well be Bobsoft at that point, because nobody.
Well, they have the problem that they had before, which is you're forking the code, and that's what they finally got rid of with the Windows 98.
Right, right.
And the
I mean,
code,
you know, no one is interested in another one, right?
Right.
So people get very excited over the notion that, you know, Microsoft's going to do something like Midori or one of those other code names that have been floating around, and say, oh yeah, they're going to get rid of Windows. You know, they're looking beyond Windows. No, not really. Probably what's going to happen is that stuff will be ported back into Windows, you know, so that, yes, they're working on virtualized file systems. They're working on, you know, spatial user interfaces and, you know, like the Microsoft Surface type stuff. I mean, this stuff just sort of happens. It's going to happen around Windows, you know, and eventually Windows will adapt over time. But I don't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'd love to be proven wrong, but I don't see any.
Well, we as users, or not users, we as enthusiasts might have a different opinion than the vast world at large, which is probably saying, ribbons? No!
Well, let me throw one at you. And this is, I don't know if we talked about this in a podcast, but the one major feature that Microsoft has talked about for Windows 7 is this multi-touch thing. And today, there are even third parties like HP that are releasing multi-touch enabled PCs. You know, I think this thing has a 19, 20, 21 inch screen somewhere in there, and they have their own special UI. So, of course, it doesn't come from Microsoft. It comes from HP. So this UI is separate from Windows. It runs on top of Windows. It's enabled only in certain applications and so forth. So here's like this big new thing, right? I mean, obviously, people can draw parallels to the iPhone and so forth. But there it is. So you have multi-touch on a PC. Fantastic. My question about something like that, because that's, I don't know if it's revolutionary, but it's certainly a big change. I have a big monitor, and the thought of touching this thing horrifies me. I would never touch this with my hand. My hand is greasy, and, you know, I mean, I just ate food with it earlier today, and what if I get, you know, why would I want to touch my, I mean, the iPhone that I have is all smudged. Why would I want something 20 times the size of that with smudges all over?
And you've got kids, so it would be peanut butter.
I type on this thing, right? You know, I communicate on this thing. I do various tasks on the computer. I don't want the screen to be all smudged up.
It is a challenge.
So I don't know.
It's a challenge.
I don't know if that's the way. I don't think that's how it's going to work. I could be wrong. Again, I could be wrong. It's just an opinion.
And then I wonder if the big companies can't innovate.
Yep.
Is there no innovation? Is it gradual evolution?
No, it's,
or does some third party come along and say, I got a better way?
I think this is the same for Microsoft as it is for any other company, and we can draw parallels with Apple here if you want. And it's just that some of the innovation will come from Microsoft. There are always going to be smaller groups. There are going to be individuals. There are going to be like the guy behind the Mojave experiment who stood up and said, "Hey, I have an idea." One guy in a huge company, and now they're doing this big campaign based on his idea. You know, that stuff will happen within companies, even big companies like Microsoft. There'll also be the small company off to the side, the Citrix type companies, like, although Citrix isn't a small company anymore, who come up with really good ideas, and they get bought, you know, and then that stuff gets rolled in. So the Apple example of something like that would be like CoverFlow. You know, iTunes before CoverFlow was, let's face it, a database, you know, of text. It was lists of text. Today, iTunes is very graphical, but part of that step to a more graphical application was, let's buy the guys that made CoverFlow, and we'll put it on our iPods, we'll put it in iPhones, we'll put it in iTunes, we'll put it on the iTunes Store. They use it on their website. It's all over the place. That didn't come from within Apple, but it's something that now is part of Apple. You know, so Apple is a big company. They have their, you know, they have certain good ideas that they can do, and they have certain things that, you know, that come from the outside, and that's true of Microsoft as well.
Yeah, I
so
guess
I don't
so.
Think innovation died.
No, it's disappointing for enthusiasts. You know, look, I was the I love BOS because it was new. Right?
Yeah, okay. Well, I love the BOS too, but you know, look at it from a different way. There's something like Windows, which is a huge product. There's a lot of little things that kind of attach themselves to this monster as it lumbers along,
right.
And it comes out every 2 to 4 years. And you know, one of the big things that's occurring right now is this notion of decoupling things from Windows. And there's a certain crowd of people who, from a certain perspective, will look at this and say, well, yes, this makes sense from an antitrust point of view, because Microsoft shouldn't be allowed to take advantage of their popularity and operating systems and foist these things on us that we don't want, like an email application or a web browser or an instant messaging application. Well, you know, a lot of that stuff now in the next version of Windows won't be part of the operating system. And there's some benefit to that. And it's not just that antitrust angle, although, again, there are those people who will love that. It's also the notion of now we have these things that, A, you can opt into if you want, and that's fine. B, because they're not part of Windows, they can be updated much more quickly. And that actually allows innovation to happen more quickly. You know, so we saw today one of the things we'll talk about is, you know, Windows Live Movie Maker. So Movie Maker is now like Mail and Messenger is being pulled out of Windows. That's good news if you like this application, because now it will be updated more often. It's great news if you don't like it, because now it's not going to be part of Windows. That's a win-win. So that's a good, I think that's a good example of, you know, how innovation can occur. And then, of course, it doesn't get in your way if you don't want it.
Here's the real problem is that people like me, and maybe I suspect people like you and a lot of our listeners, got into this business because it was so exciting and new and different.
Sure.
And now, as it becomes a mature industry, it's going to be challenging for us.
Well, but okay. So one of the things I always felt really bad about, I've always been an avid reader of these history of the PC industry books, you know, all the Apple books, all the Microsoft books, you know, from the 1980s, especially in the early days. And I always felt really bad that I wasn't part of that, you know. You know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak started Apple, and Bill Gates and Paul Allen started Microsoft, and you know, down the road, and all this stuff happened, and there were battles about operating systems and computers, and you know, history happened. I felt bad; I wasn't really part of that, you know. But then later on, of course, there was this internet wave, and then suddenly it was happening again. It got really exciting, and I'd say right now we're maybe on the third wave of this stuff, which is a move toward mobility as well.
Right.
And also this pervasive connectivity. And this is the cloud computing stuff. And it's exciting to be around now. I mean, even though, you know, Windows itself becomes less exciting maybe over time, you know, more mature, updated less frequently. You know, you can only go so far. You know, Apple has hit that point with
they all have.
With Mac OS X. Yeah. And it's
even,
interesting.
Even
because
Linux has.
Linux is. Have they updated Linux? I can't remember.
They update it constantly, but it's never
So I get another couple of emails from people. About
yeah,
Linux.
Yeah. Let's get some email. You know, Linux is so boring. It's so boring. I think that this is just in general. We are in a mature industry now. We know, you know.
There's good parts to that too, aren't there?
It's stable. It's reliable. It provides, most importantly, a stable scaffold for innovative developers to build on. You don't want the operating system to be changing wildly.
Sometimes it is nice to start over. So something like the iPhone or something like Ajax web applications or whatever that, you know, these new platforms might be. Part of the benefit and also part of the problem with them is they're not mature. They don't have a lot of that stuff that we just take for granted on the more mature platforms. Mm-hmm. So for some people, it's the Wild West. It's really exciting. For some people, it's the Wild West and it's really dangerous and they don't want to be there. And you can pick and choose if you're, you know, I've talked a lot about the notion of, you know, not locking your data to one PC and that you should have it, you know, synchronized to different places and backed up to the cloud. But there's some people like, you're crazy. I have one guy who insists that the best data solution on earth is like this USB key that he pulls around with him as if he doesn't understand that you actually have a limited number of writes and reads and those things and then they die. But, you know, there are people like that.
Right.
And I would say where technology is at today, there's something for everybody, you know, so I don't know. We're not going to have another Windows 95.
No.
Sorry.
No, but that's fine.
I kind of wish we did, you know. But there's still stuff to get excited about. That's why I look at the iPhone. The iPhone, for all its problems, you know, and you can debate it back and forth. But at least it's interesting,
yeah,
right?
That's why there was all the attention. Exactly.
Yeah. It is interesting. And if all that comes out of this is, you know, Windows Mobile gets better as a result and BlackBerrys get better as a result, I think there'll be more to it than that. But if that's all that comes out of this, well, guess what? We all still benefited. So fantastic.
Hey, you know what's really exciting? Zune 3 is here.
Jeez. Another patented. We need like a Leo Segway tone. Cha-cha-ching.
And now, another subject.
Nice. No, that was good. That was good. I like that.
I have a bunch of sound effects. I could whip something out here.
I wish you wouldn't.
that's a completely different sound effect. I had that somewhere, but I don't think you want me to play that one. Yeah. So, actually, I'm sitting here with my Zune. I have the second generation Zune. Yes. And I've just haven't gotten around to upgrading. Should I upgrade?
Yeah.
What?
I have to say, you know, we've gone back and forth on the Zune a lot, right? I mean, I think both of us, you know, you feel that sort of rise every time a new version comes out, and then it kind of settles down. And Zune is a great example of the technology, the psychological part of technology, because it's very exciting for a little while, but then it seems like it sits still for a while and it gets boring and it gets, you know, you wonder why it doesn't do certain things and all that. But I have to say, you know, this too, there's a sense of maturity to it. I feel like they're hitting this point now where, especially for music, and maybe solely for music, which, let's face it, is the sweet spot in their market.
Oh, yeah.
The Zune is a phenomenally good device. I was initially very disappointed that they didn't update the hardware in any way, shape, or form. You know, the hardware devices, there's, you know, the two of them, the flash model, which is the small one, and the hard drive based model, which is the bigger one. The form factor is exactly the same.
Right.
You know, they're offering new colors and new color schemes and so forth, but they're exactly the same. And I thought, you know, given how much Apple focuses, I mean, every single year on, you know, this is the thinnest one ever, it's the lightest one ever, it's the shiniest, glassest, it's greenest, whatever it is, you know, on and on and on. I mean, superlative after superlative, you know, that they could have done something. And I think I expressed my fears last week that, you know, something's going on with Zune and, you know, maybe the devices as we know them are a thing of the past going forward. I don't know. But actually, having played around with the devices a lot and using them with the various hardware accessories that Microsoft offers, which, again, have not been updated in any way, shape, or form, you know, I do actually see some of the benefits to doing things this way because, you know, one of the problems on the Apple side is they change those damn dock connectors on every single device.
Yeah, that's frustrating. Imagine being an accessory manufacturer.
Oh, jeez. And it's really bad because some of these devices are almost completely identical to their, right, you know, their predecessors. Right. Why is the iPod...
Well, they haven't changed the dock like in a couple of years, though, have they?
No. I mean, in other words, you need like that little adapter.
Oh, right? So the size, the shape. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you have, you know, one of the benefits, maybe the biggest benefit of the iPod is that ecosystem around the devices especially, but also on the software side, but just on the hardware specifically, you know, you have to keep all these stupid little cap things around, you know, make sure you have the right one. For
I just threw a bunch of them out and then I had second
like,
thoughts. Like it's like, oh.
Chiclets that are all over the house.
the little plastic pieces that go in whatever dock, you know, like whatever speaker system or whatever. And I've talked to Paul Griffin, who makes a lot of iPod accessories. He says Apple doesn't tell us ahead of time. We find out the same time you do, and then we have to revamp our product line.
So secretive. And that's actually another problem with the iPod line. So there is a lot of hardware, but I was going back looking at the reviews I wrote from last year's iPods, and I noticed something that I was seeing as a problem this year too, which is Apple announces, say, this new Nano, and they in the keynote address in the the Jobs video where they announced the devices, he talks about these accessories. They'll be available later in October.
Yeah, because
you know,
because they
because
can't
they're just
get
not
out
here
now.
Yet. So yeah. It's sort of like this, you know, here's the device, but you can't use anything with it yet. Right. Sorry. So one of the advantages, I think, to the way we'll see going forward if they can continue this, because I think compared to the iPods that they compete with, they're still competitively sized. I don't think anyone would pick up a Flash Zune or a Shuffle and say, yeah, okay, so the Shuffle, it is It's skinnier, no doubt about it. But, I mean, come on, they're comparable. You know, they're fine. So I don't really see that as a huge competitive advantage for Apple. And like I said, on the Zune side, it's actually kind of nice that they haven't changed things because everything you have works, you know, with no...
Although that's, again, against the grain of all of us early adopters who want change. Everything must be new. Fins. Well, we need fins. Money.
Yeah. That's true. Right. That's true.
Where's my fins?
Well, the fins, such as they are all on software. The software
side. Yeah.
And that stuff is awesome. And again, you know, last year, Microsoft, you know, ripped away everything they had done before. They remember the first version of the Zune software was based on Windows Media Player. And it was a mess. It was like this weird shell on top of Windows Media Player. Last year, they replaced it with the 2.0 software. And then later, I think it was in May of this year, they replaced that with 2.5. And this version of the software, it is that start from scratch thing that we sometimes want people to do. And they did it with their player. And now that we have 3.0, which again is based on 2.0, you can kind of see it's maturing nicely. So a lot of the stuff that was missing the first time around has been put back in and it works properly. And, you know, there's still some little things, I guess, if you want to kind of pick and choose. But what really is driving this release, and the thing that's really interesting about it, and it's also interesting, by the way, that Apple's now trying to do this in iTunes, is they're working on these ways to get people to discover new music, right? And obviously there's a mercenary, you know, rationale behind that. They want you to buy music from their store and so forth. But I don't think that Microsoft any more than Apple would make a lot of money from this store. In fact, they're very open about the notion of, look, we want you to use MP3. We think that's the future, not our own format. You can buy this MP3 files from anywhere you want, Amazon, whatever. You know, they want you to buy their devices. And the way that Microsoft goes about offering you ways to find new music is, I think, I want to say this is going to sound strange, but I actually think it's more human than the way Apple goes about it. I think that the features that are in each software are very interesting. You know, Apple has that Genius feature, right?
Right.
Which I think I mentioned last week was more serendipitous than genius, but it is interesting.
In fact, I think people are agreeing that, as you said on your Twitter, that the Windows one is better. But in defense of Apple, the Genius, their Genius is collaborative, so it needs more.
Well, right, but so is Microsoft. Right?
Yeah, but Microsoft's been out for a while, right?
What do you mean? No. This is new to this.
This
version.
Is new. Oh, the mix. What is it called? Mixware.
So,
okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. So if you want to look at MixView versus Genius, you know, the thing that's odd about Genius is it works very much like traditional iTunes, right? First of all, it's algorithms up in the sky that you have no inkling how they work, right? It's sort of this, you know, you make a request and Apple comes, you know, they sometimes they don't, because I've noticed some songs. I've actually picked out individual songs in my list where I think this is going to be interesting. I can't wait to see what it picks. And it actually comes back and says, sorry, that we can't do it for this one. And I think that's odd. So, for example, if you think about my music collection, I have, you know, over 500 albums. I'm going to try to bring this up so I can see exactly what I have. How do I bring up songs in iTunes? Okay. So there's, you know, 2,800 songs, right?
Yeah.
It spans the gamut. You know, the hard rock, pop, there's new age, you know, instrumental type stuff. There's a little bit of dance music. There's a little bit of world music, but there's some stuff that's like soundtracks, right? So how do soundtracks get categorized? I mean, the notion of a song being a soundtrack type is kind of silly when you think about it, right? Because that song is like a rock song or an instrumental or classical, whatever it is. I mean, the notion of a soundtrack itself is kind of silly.
Right.
But then, so what's Genius doing, right? If I take a song that's on a soundtrack and I say, make me a Genius list, does it make me a Genius list of songs that many of which are on soundtracks? Are many of them songs by the same artists? Are many of them songs that are rock songs, you know? So I've been playing around with that, and I have to tell you, I have no idea what it's doing. And that is what's fun about it, because it's insane.
Right.
It's like the computer from 2001. You have no idea what this thing's doing. It's fun. I mean, I actually think it's a lot of fun. But on the Microsoft side, I think what's interesting about it is they also have their own algorithms. You know, they have, there's some something going on up in the cloud where they're making some, that, you know, they've made some decision behind the scenes. You don't know what it is. But what they're also tossing to you are, you know, related artists that they've determined are related. They're tossing you things like, here are the people in the Zune Social, which is their community service, who like this group. And then you can click on one of those guys and you can see the music that that guy listens to. Obviously, you have to opt into this. It's not, you know, your collection is not open to the world or anything like that. But it becomes this very organic thing. And the presentation is very graphical. So there's this sort of tile view where the thing that you selected is in the middle, and then these satellite objects are hovering around it. And as you click on the satellite objects, which could be other users, they could be other artists, they could be other albums by the same artist, depending on what you've clicked on, you know, that organic view changes. And if I have a problem with this whole effect, I have to tell you, the only problem I really have is it's not big enough. I have these high-res screens, and it's sort of locked at a certain size. And I wish this thing would explode like a flower on the screen. I think they could just.
I want 30 inches of things.
Yeah, people, yeah, yeah.
That's very cool.
And the other advantage to the Microsoft approach is outside of mixed view, because there are two other things that are sort of related to this. There's a feature called Pix. Pix is for everybody. So if you're, just use the Zune software, for example. Microsoft will make picks, again, based on some sort of algorithm up in the cloud of, based on what you listen to, these are the songs, the artists, the albums that we think you might also be interested in. So you can do that. It's free. It's just, you know, part of the service. If you're a subscriber, you can also subscribe to these channels. And channels right now, they have, Zune employees, I believe, and also partners like DJs and radio stations that create certain types of playlists. But like the Billboard playlist that they're sort of modeled after, they're updated every Tuesday. And if you have a subscription, you can subscribe to a channel and you can get these things every single week automatically. You can get them to your device wirelessly automatically if you want them to get them that way. So it's these constantly updated content lists that you have to, you know, you can subscribe to them. You could buy the music if you wanted to. You could do that. But if you are a Zune Pass subscriber, you just get this stuff automatically. And if you like it, you could just save one as a playlist. But it's something that's updated all the time. And that's really interesting. So I think between these three things, they've created this, it's almost like a music discovery ecosystem, you know?
Right. Well, that's kind of what you need, because you don't have a record store.
That's the thing. And my number one complaint about the iTunes store from day one was always, They have a certain amount of content. It's incredible today. In fact, it's almost too much. It's like bursting at the seams. But it's really hard to discover new music, right? I could click on a group I like, and it says related, and okay, here are the top three songs, and you know, whatever. Zune does that too, but that's, I don't know. You know, so the genius thing in iTunes 8 is, I think, the first real credible or viable stab that they've made at music discoverability, and it's good, but I'd have to say on the Zune side, if you like music, Microsoft's actually doing a much better job right now. It's pretty impressive.
I think this is the case with the iTunes Store. Is it also the case with the Mix that you only get recommended stuff they sell?
No, actually, that's one
thing. It could be from people's collections.
Yeah, actually, and I have to say, it does. Let's see. How do I say this? It is weighted towards stuff that they sell. But one of the weird things about Zune, and this is true even if you're just browsing the store, if you go to Zune Marketplace and you pick an artist that you like, you know, one of the things it will actually show you is albums by that group that they don't sell.
I like and that. It's like, yes,
it's so weird. You know, and you can't click
and you can't get it.
Yeah. Well, actually, what they do is they and I just tried this over on my other computer. I wonder if I can bring this up again. They'll actually bring you to a web page that I believe has links to other. Yeah. And so that's interesting. I mean,
I like that. That shows real that caring about the customer over sales.
Yeah. The other thing that Microsoft does in this new version of the software that's really pretty is for many, many artists, they have this gorgeous now playing screen. If you start playing music and walk away from the computer, you don't move the mouse at all. The display changes to this beautiful full screen view that has imagery of the artist that animates and then text about the artist, the song, eventually some biographical information. It's almost like a screensaver, but it's got these sort of changing color schemes, and the text moves around and the image moves around, and then the image updates to another image, and it moves back and forth between this information in a very graphical and beautiful way. And then as it changes songs, of course, that will change to the next group. So this stuff always changes. And, obviously visualizations have been around for a long time, but they're generally these sort of abstract shapes or balls bouncing around,
right,
or whatever it is.
Right.
And this thing is just, I mean, again, this is your music, and here it is presented in just the one of the nicest possible ways. Really nice presentation.
You've convinced me now. I'm going to have to reactivate my Zune account.
But how do you rate these things? In other words,
right.
So you have these two competing systems, because these things don't stand alone, right? Right. As a PC user, you're free to use iTunes or Zune software. You could use both. There's no problem. I do that on all my PCs. But if you really want to buy into the ecosystem, obviously you want the device. You might want to go with the subscription. You might want something for the car. there's all this
stuff.
It's
a commitment. Yeah.
It is a commitment. So how do you choose? And I guess the way right now, where I am right now, I have not written my review of the Zune 3. I've not published it. I'm partway through the review. My gut feeling right now is that obviously the iPod and iTunes, they have a much bigger ecosystem. And if you look beyond the music stuff, they do a better job with movies, because they have movies, even TV shows, other content. There are many more games. If you want to buy an iPod Touch, one of the big advantages of that device is all those applications, especially the games, that you can purchase and download for free. So there's that wider ecosystem. But if you're one of those people where primarily you're looking at music, I'd have to say Zune has now crossed the line where I honestly think, and again, I may adjust this. I need to a little more time because it's only been a few days. But I at this point in time, I feel like Zune has the advantage for music lovers. And if that's why you want this thing, if that's what you're doing, and I think for a lot of people, that is what they're doing. Mostly music, maybe a little bit of this other stuff on the side. I think Zune has...
Well,
I think the balance has changed.
The proof will be in the pudding, because you now have both. And if you find when you want to listen to music, you're going to your Zune. See, I don't have...
Now for weeks, I've been using just the Zune.
That's the proof. I only have the 4 gig one, so the little flash one. So,
yep.
But that's enough music. I mean, especially, this is where I like the subscription thing, because you just push.
Oh, and
push
that's I should talk about that. So I also signed up for a subscription, and I've always felt like this makes a lot of sense. This model. Now, obviously, it's never taken off. I think Apple would have done this already. I think they have such poor relations now with the music industry that they can't do a subscription, because people just don't want to give them the content. They're not letting them sell MP3 or DM-free music for the most part. So they have this on the Zune side. And I have to say, it's really interesting, because I find myself, you don't have to think about anything anymore. There'll be a greatest hits album by some group, and it's two discs long, 38 songs. I don't know most of the music.
Doesn't matter.
No problem. Download it. Last night we were watching the ball game on TV, and I had Zune Marketplace up on my laptop, and I was like, download.
It's fun, too, isn't it? Just kind of saying, I'll take a little of that.
Nice. I feel like $15 a month, a little too expensive, but
maybe not.
I went to the gym.
That's only one CD. That's 1.5 CDs a month. That's not a lot.
I think that's maybe how you decide. So I would say digital disc, digital CDs or digital downloads, album downloads, maybe that's two. So if you're oriented toward music lovers. So if you're a music lover, because there are no other advantages.
And a special kind of music lover, one that's always interested in new stuff.
Yes.
Basically, that's young people.
Yes.
Us old farts listen to the same albums over and over.
That's for sure. And by the way, if you could release the same albums again and again with just one or two extra tracks, I would buy them.
We'd take that, yeah.
Yeah, but
we're so pathetic.
It is pathetic.
But no, that's why I think this is aimed at kids.
Let's talk about the number of times I've bought the Star Wars movies.
Yeah, exactly.
But music lover, $15 a month. If you're already spending that or more,
I think kids do.
I don't want to say it will pay for itself. That's a ridiculous statement.
Right.
But this might be a good way to go.
I'm trying to find. I stuck my Zune in my backpack. I'm trying to find it now because now you made me want to update the darn thing. I know it's here somewhere.
Hey, you get two free games when you update.
Oh, you do? What kind of games do they have on the Zune?
Texas Hold'em and I want to say Hexic.
Oh, they're crappy games. Kind of one of those. You don't buy a Zune for games. You know, you want games. You get the iPod or the iPod Touch or the phone.
No, but again, I think there are going to be more announcements coming about games. I fully expect there'll be some video stuff coming down the road, but. Again, the focus here is on music. This is just a diversion. You know, it's something we do on the side. They can check off the list and say, okay, we do this now.
Yeah, yeah, it's extra stuff.
It does work with audiobooks. I loaded up the Zune 120 I have with every Audible book that I still have.
Yay, you know, finally.
Works fine.
Only took a few years. Wasn't a high priority. I think if you think about it, Welcome to the Social, they are focused on 20-somethings. They're kids. And they don't. They don't read. We talked about this last week. They don't read books.
Yeah. No, they really don't. They should.
They're illiterate. Kids today.
You
kids. Don't care. They don't care. So let's, in fact, as long as we're talking about Audible, we want to welcome Audible to the show. If you're a Zune owner now, you can listen to what we've been talking about all this time. Audible books, 50,000 wonderful titles, all sorts of great literature, but comedy, radio shows. All sorts of fun stuff. All you got to do is go to audible.com to sign up. Actually, let me give you a special URL so you can get a free book. audible.com/windows. You go there and you sign up. You can get a credit toward a free book. If you decide not to stick around, the book's yours to keep. Don't worry about it. But I think you're going to want to stick around once you see the 50,000 titles. Paul, what are you reading right now on your Zune?
So this is an older one, and I think I had recommended a sequel to this by the same author. It's a book called Hannibal.
By Tom spooky, huh?
And what got me into this is I was in Seattle and I caught the movie on DVD, and it reminded me of two things. One is that there's some incredible music in the movie.
The Silence of the Lambs you're talking about.
Yeah, or, this or is Hannibal. The sequel, The Silence of the Lambs. Let's put it this way. Silence of the Lambs is, in fact, a sequel to a book called Red Dragon.
Which you did recommend before.
Love it. That's one of the best crime novels ever written. Yeah. But Silence of the Lambs, you know, if you're familiar with Red Dragon, you sort of realize that Silence of the Lambs is, in fact, kind of a weak ripoff of Red Dragon in many ways. But
same,
Hannibal
is the same author, though, right?
Same author, absolutely. Oh, okay. Which is what makes it strange. Well, a lot of people got into these stories because of Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
As did I. But what you realize is, you know, going back and rereading the older stuff, you know, he told the story before, but apparently nobody bought the book. So he told it again. Now, Hannibal is a completely different story. And in fact, the book is slightly different from the movie, which is a Ridley Scott movie. Like I said, fantastic music. But it made me want to go back and sort of revisit some changes. And in researching this online, I discovered there's a weird little subculture of people that look for all of the symbology in these stories and they pull things out. I mean, it's really kind of interesting.
It's the story of a churro and a pleather shoe.
And the conquistador.
The conquistador.
No, it has nothing to do with that.
It has nothing to do with that. Okay.
It's not for everybody. I should say it is gruesome.
Oh yeah. This isn't for little ones at all. Yeah. Or even anybody who's like, you know, doesn't like violence and people living in other people's skins.
Yes. Let's if you, for example, found that to be disturbing.
Yeah. You might want to
for some reason
stop right here.
It's a stop.
Yeah. I saw. Wasn't Red Dragon a movie, too?
Red Dragon was two movies. So the original was called Manhunter.
I didn't see that.
And it was sort of an MP-style, you know, early 80s movie with the guy who eventually went on to CSI. I don't know his name, but he played the main character. And then after the Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal movies came out, they redid Red Dragon. Even though it's an early story.
That was scary.
Yeah. Ooh. Decent.
Well, that's our pick. Have you been terrorized? Audible.com/windows. Go there right now. Look at there's all so many books. If you don't want horror, you can get romance. If you don't want romance, get history. You don't want history, get self-help. There's unlimited choices. Great science fiction, too. And now you can play it on your Zune along with your iPod, your iPhone, your Zen, your Magellan, your TomTom, your Garmin Nuvi, and on and on. You'd even burn CDs or just listen on your computer. audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support. Oh, wait a minute. I think I found a segue sound. And now, let's talk about sync. Let's talk about live.
Okay.
Windows Live Wave 3. We started talking about this a little bit last week, but we didn't.
Yeah,
we didn't.
I talked to these guys the week before, and all I knew was that later this month they would be launching the beta of the application part of what they're calling Wave 3, right? The third wave of Windows Live products and services. You know, Wave 2 last year came out in November, I want to say. It was the, you know, the Windows Live suite where you can, you know, have that right. single download and you download, you know, you can install all the applications. But what we have now is a new version of the suite, which includes some new applications. They've updated everything. Some really interesting improvements, but also a couple of new applications. And as of this morning, it came out this morning. It sort of leaked out. I mean, people found out about it and, you know, I threw some screenshots up, but I wasn't sure if I could write about it yet because I never heard word from Microsoft that it was okay. But later today, they announced it officially. So, in fact, just before we started talking, I got the email that said, okay, you're good to write about it. So
I got a problem. Should I download the Zune Store or should I download the new Live Wave 3? I use Live Mail. I use Live Writer. I love.
Yeah, well, that one's been updated significantly.
Ooh,
so
I'm going to have to get it. That's for blog posting. Yeah.
Everything's been updated. So maybe we could step through the applications and I'll give you some highlight, you know, mile high view of what's changed.
You do that while I plug in my Zune.
I'll do that while you take a nap. So,
page one.
Need a drink. Page one. Yes.
Yeah, take it. Little beverage. Little sip of the beverage.
A reading from the book of Wave 3.
They call it Wave 3 because it's like the third generation, right?
That's right.
All right.
Should I just talk? I don't even know what you're doing.
I'm here. I'm C. Hello.
Okay. we usually have video.
I haven't left yet. I haven't gone anywhere.
I see. Let me know.
But first of all, I guess my question would be, how do I update?
How do you update?
Because I already have a lot of these, you know, already.
Yeah. Well, you need to download the whole thing and reinstall everything because it will update everything. So
start from scratch. So you go to get.live.com.
Actually, you go to download.live.com.
What's wrong with get.live.com? Did they change that? Wasn't it?
No. This is a beta.
Okay. Download.live. All right.
Yeah, they're still offering the, you know, the Wave 2 version of the suite.
I see. So you want the new one, you have to go to download.live.com.
I've not actually gone to the site, so I'm going to go look at it now to see what it says. Yes.
Let's go together. Yes. What do you say?
Click on that download button.
Okay.
Yeah, that will work nicely.
Says you. All right.
So I'm doing it.
Download.live.com. And then there's a big download button. All right. That's easy. Press the download button. Now it says, do you want to run or save? I'm going to run because I'm lazy.
Because you're that kind of guy.
I'm that kind of guy. I'm impetuous.
What could go wrong?
It probably is sensible to save, especially with a beta, to save the file so you can reinstall it later, but okay. But in these cases, the installers are small little stubs that then download everything anyway.
That's right.
I don't want Messenger beta. Okay, let's go through it. Messenger beta, should I get that?
Yes. Well, assuming, do you use Messenger?
I use Trillion because I want to do all of them, right?
I see.
So Messenger just does MSN, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I think the big advance on this one that I've seen is that, well, you know, obviously the user interface has been updated. There's a little bit of arrow kind of stuff going on here and there.
All right.
Okay, that's fine. But the big deal is you could be signed on in more than one location for the first time, and it will actually manage that.
Oh, good, because I have three or four Vista machines. I have to do it on all.
Yeah, and I was a little confused by this at first, but having played with this throughout the day, I've actually come to enjoy that. So that works pretty well.
So Movie Maker, big changes?
Well, Movie Maker's brand new. Right. There was no version of Movie Maker in the previous version of the suite. So Movie Maker up through now has been part of Windows. Now it's going to be going out through Windows Live. And this one is really interesting because it's been severely detuned. And what this reminds me of is I met the Movie Maker guys long, long time ago, and they were really burned at the time because back in the day, this would have been 99, 2000, somewhere in that time frame. They were working on this thing and had never announced it. It was going to be part of Windows Millennium Edition. But then Apple came out with iMovie. And, of course, iMovie was really sophisticated. And what they were working on was very simple. But it wasn't simple because they didn't know what they were doing. It was simple because they felt like the typical PC user wouldn't really be able to handle much beyond what they were doing. But of course they got all this bad press because
we're not all morons.
iMovie came out and was a pretty sophisticated application. And then they came out with their little
ironically, tips. Apple has now updated iMovie to be stupid and simple.
Yes. Well, that's kind of what this is. So, you know, Movie Maker has improved dramatically over the years. It's actually a fantastic application. They get no credit for this. Now, the new version.
Does it now handle AVC HD format files? Because that's.
I haven't tested that, but what it will do is, well, it uploads to. It's really designed around the way people actually do video for the most part, which is this. Most people have video capabilities on their cell phone or on their still camera, and that's what they. That's the video they're taking. And then what they want to do with it is put it up on YouTube or, you know, Microsoft's site or wherever they might want to put it, somewhere online. You know, people aren't really making DVDs that much. They're not working with high-def video. You know, they're making these, they have these little things. And this is actually the way I make movies. I mean, I bring a still camera around, and every once in a while, I'll make a 30-second video of something. And that's about it. I mean, I don't really have time to do anything else because if I was, I wouldn't be enjoying whatever we were doing at the time. So... this product is aimed at, it's super simple, and I think it's going to turn a lot of people off for that reason. I mean, the people who are Windows Movie Maker fans are going to look at this and say, oh my God, you know, what happened here? But it's really designed to create these things that you're going to share.
I think you actually hit the nail on the head. I mean, more people are using flip cameras and things like that than they're doing kind of big elaborate things. And if you are, then you should buy Adobe Premiere Elements. It's $80, you know? Exactly.
Well, you know, you think, oh, man, I got to get an HD camera. And then what? Now I have really high quality video of a really stupid event that, you know, no one's going to ever want to watch.
And I can't edit it because my machine isn't fast enough, et cetera.
And I'm not going to want to edit it because have you ever edited video? It's terrible.
Yeah, I hate it. I mean, it's funny because I used to say that all the time. I used to say, oh, nobody's ever going to want to do this. I've done it professionally. It's the biggest pain in the butt. Yeah. And I was actually kind of shocked at how many people... it turns out, want to edit.
I think
video,
there was a short period of time where the iMovie, iDVD stuff was kind of interesting, and
everybody got excited about it, but then they lost interest because it's too much work.
Yeah, you do it well. Yeah, it's too much work.
And you know, if it's not, if you're the 5% or 10% of users who find it interesting, there's plenty of choices for you. It's not like you can't go out and get Vegas or Adobe Premiere Elements or iMovie or Final Cut.
They're great tools, like I said, Premiere Elements.
Yeah.
On the PC, very inexpensive. If that's what you want.
Okay, so I'm still going down the list here of things to install. I'll check that family safety beta.
Yeah, this is the one I haven't tested because I tried this on the previous version, and you have to install it on all of your PCs for it to work properly. You have to set up Windows Live ID sub accounts for your children. And I actually went through this process one time, and I got to tell you, by the way, the thing's free. It's basically a multi PC parental control capability.
That's good.
If you need it, it's fantastic. I don't need it.
Well, you have little kids. What do you do to protect them online? Nothing. You don't do anything, do you? Neither do I. No, I use OpenDNS and I block off really bad stuff, that's sufficient.
I think I think when things get a little more sophisticated with them, I'm going to have to do something. But honestly, I mean, we had one episode where, you know, it's actually kind of a funny story if you think about it, had stumbled onto a site. He was looking for, what was the term he typed in? He typed in something about pranks.
Yeah.
And it went from there to booby trap, and it went from there to guess what?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So...
That's my son's favorite search term, by the way.
Is it okay? Yeah. So you have this. Basically, that happens once. My son is naive and honest enough where you just kind of say, "Now I don't want you using Google."
He's little. He's little,
and he does. But that day will end. So eventually,
he'll be 13, and then you'll have to worry.
Then I'll have to worry. But you know, things get more sophisticated. I mean, I have no doubt that Windows Live's, family safety or OneCare or something be around to make sure that's okay.
Okay, I'm about 30% through. It knew that I already have Windows Live Live Mail. It knew that I had Live Writer and the album. So it just said update those.
Yeah, exactly. Update those. So Windows Live Movie Maker, brand new to this version. Outlook Connector for the first time is included in the suite, although that's been around for a little while. Windows Live Mail now has that calendar sync. And the so the calendar is built right into the application. So it's sort of, again, more and more like Outlook every release, but now you've got that calendar sync across, you know, local application, web, and hopefully eventually to the mobile phone as well. So,
okay, I should probably be doing this on the machine
that we're using. It will prompt you to reboot. I'm going to have to caution you once again.
I'm going to kind of regret this because it already has closed Internet Explorer, closing the chat room. But
is it really?
Yeah, I guess. Well, it makes sense. And probably any minute now we'll close our recording. So,
well, listen, it was
talk
fun
fast.
Talking.
Yeah.
Windows Live Photo Gallery, photo application does
that's
people
awesome.
Tagging.
That's an awesome.
Yeah, just like Picasa.
Yeah.
And again, it's the type of thing you circle a face, say, hey, this is me. And then it will go through and look for you. And you can do it for your friends and your family and all that kind of stuff if you want. And I think obviously the big deal there is you know who these people are. I mean, you're doing this. So if you're going to be sharing photos online, you've seen those things on various sites where, you know, you can point at someone in the picture and it says, this is Sue or, you know,
right.
This is whoever. And that's kind of neat. But it also integrates with third-party services. So Flickr is built in as it has been since the previous version, but I know they'll be opening it up to other services as well. So it's cool. Not just about Microsoft services. It also integrates with other services. And then Windows Live Writer, which is the blog editor, which is awesome. The big thing this time around is the video published stuff has gotten really sophisticated. And I had looked at a beta of this a few months ago, and in the current version, you know, I publish up to a community server in my blog. In the editor, you can see it. But when you publish the video, it doesn't appear. But now in the new version, it actually works. So that's kind of cool. So, and all these things, you know, new user interface, it's kind of an interesting toolbar slash menu combination type thing. It's pretty dramatically different from the last version as well. So you'll see that across all the different applications.
Very cool. You know, the fact that they're giving this away and that it's such an impressive suite is pretty amazing.
And I would also say, you know, down the road, you're going to see dramatic improvements to the online services, including new online services. You can almost guess where that stuff's going to go. But there's something. There are a couple things in here that are not exposed in this beta. Rafael Rivera, who's someone I brought up again and again on the blog, I think we've talked about him here on the podcast as well, discovered mentions of something called Windows Live Sync, which is what I was playing with when you first called me today. And sure enough, Windows Live Sync is folder share, that thing we talked about last week. And as it turns out, you can download Windows Live Sync separately from the Microsoft website. I'll put a link to that on my blog. I haven't had a chance. I just found out about this when you called me. So as you called, I was kind of playing, and yes, it actually said you cannot be running Folder Share and Windows Live Sync at the same time. So I turned it off, turned on Windows Live Sync, and you can tell it's the same
thing
application. Yeah. They've renamed it. So,
right.
And this is that new sync platform, like I said, that eventually will be built on top of Live Mesh. So I think the next beta of Windows Live Wave 3 will have this as one of those things that you can choose to install. So that's another new application for the suite, I guess.
Well, it's very impressive. They've done a very nice job.
I like it a lot.
I you know, it's funny. I've said this many times. I think this is the, and I guess it is that craving for something new that we were talking about, that innovation. But I thought this is the most interesting part of Microsoft for some time. these are some of the best engineers. Yeah. These, you know.
Well, you know, they're on the schedule, right? I mean, they bang these things out. It's really kind of impressive.
Right.
And, you know, these things happen pretty quickly, you know, and that's cool. So, you know, again, we'll see this. There'll be a couple more applications that will happen over the next few months. New mobile applications will be coming, and then updates to all of the existing services and some new services as well. So, you know, taken together, this Windows Live Wave 3 is, in fact, a huge wave of, you know, new and updated products and services, you know, across the board. Really, really interesting stuff.
Very cool. All right, let's take a break, because I know you have some stuff you want to talk about. The tip of the week, the software of the week.
Yep.
Although we kind of talked about the software of the week.
Sure
we'll talk about it some more. How about that? I do want to mention that this show is brought to you by the good folks at, you know who I'm talking about, Visa. Actually, you don't, since it's brought to you by many different people. But in this case, I was talking about Visa. When you go shopping online, you want to protect yourself. You want to do it securely. And when you use your Visa card, that's exactly what you get. You wouldn't mail somebody cash through the mail. You wouldn't use PayPal to pay somebody online. You use Visa, because if anything goes wrong, Visa stands behind you. No fraud. No, oh, you want to get that phone? Go ahead.
Yeah, in fact, while I'm getting this phone, I will also turn off my answer machine because I'm an idiot.
I'll continue to talk about Visa while you do that. Paul's running over. Maybe that call could be somebody from Visa saying, hey, Paul, we just noticed that you bought 4 pairs of running shoes in Australia. And you would say,
exactly.
No.
I think it's someone from Microsoft's PR firm.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Oh, there she is.
Go ahead, take that call. Meanwhile, I'll tell you, the next time you go shopping online, you want to be safe, you want to be secure, you want to use Visa. Really, honestly, it is the way to shop online or off. I got my Visa cards, and that's all I use, and that's all I want you to use. Visa! We thank them so much for their support of Windows.
All right, now I get it. I've got to give them some credit for being safe and secure. No problems, they assure. It's Visa.
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 Oh, yeah.
So, you have music.
Yeah. You like that?
I apologize for the phone call. I apologize that I was unable to turn off my.
Was that Wagner Edstrom calling?
It was, in fact, Wagner Edstrom. Yeah.
Just tell him. Just tell him hi from Leo. They'll know. They'll know who it is. just tell him what up. Leo says what up. They'll know what I'm talking about.
Usually these phone calls start out, "Hi Paul, this is whoever from Wagner Edstrom. We noticed that you wrote a story today."
God. Do you cringe when you get that?
Yeah, I do.
It's like, oh. But see,
I'm always worried that I've crossed some line, you know, right. And that someone's going to call me on it.
I hate the call when, remember that non-disclosure agreement you signed? That's the call.
Yes, yes. We were listening to the last episode of your podcast, and we noticed you mentioned in 17 separate instances.
Oh, God. That's why
it's kind of pathological how often you violated the NDA.
I don't actually sign them. That's why. Because of getting that call one time too many. It's like, I have a sieve for a mind. I can't remember what I'm supposed to know or
never,
not know.
I've never willfully violated an NDA. However, stupidly, probably done it by mistake several times.
You forget. So I don't sign NDAs. I don't say, when somebody sends me embargoed material, I said, I didn't look at it. I don't want it. You tell me when I could talk about it. That's just me. That's just how I operate. That's the kind of guy I am.
There you go.
All right, I'm just teasing you now. You got a tip of the week for us, sir?
You can't chastise me enough.
I didn't. Did I chastise you? I didn't. I didn't mean to say that.
No, I think I'm chastising myself.
Yes, you can't not sign on NDAs because of the nature of your business. You have lead times. I don't have any lead time. That's what I tell them. I say, you tell me when it comes out because that's the first time I'm going to mention it anyway.
Yeah,
I can't mention it until then. And
it's a hard.
But you're in the print media, and print media is kind of stuck that way.
Well, I also do the book stuff. I mean, there's
oh, that's worse.
Kind of there's all this weird, but they don't ever know how to approach me,
right?
You know, plus now it's awful. I mean, I blog, I do the podcast.
That's the problem. You get in new media or instantaneous media, as I like to call it, then it becomes a problem because
I'm a triple threat.
Yeah, to yourself mostly.
Or something to myself. Yeah.
So your tip of the week, renaming multiple. Wait a minute. I know why you don't feel comfortable moving on yet. We need the segue music.
Oh, yes.
I apologize.
It's okay.
You know, you probably feel like, well, I can't move on until I hear the appropriate segue music.
It's something like. Nice.
There you go. Wasn't it?
I was like, what was
that? That was like hee-haw. Back to the cornfield. Let's see. How about... No, that's not going to do it. How about this?
I want to be safe.
And now, a tip from Paul.
It's like... Warner Brothers, 1945.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? I don't know where these came from. They're just kind of old.
You have too many toys.
I have. Well, that's what I live for.
So do I, actually. I'm gonna do another one of those.
Another? You just finished.
Yeah. It won't be as big as the last one, and I definitely won't have as many books. But I have all these. I've got 30 stupid little devices, and
one of these days I'm gonna open. We'll do an unboxing. Actually, I want to promote this. The unboxing of Lotus. What did you send me? Symphony? Lotus Symphony for the Mac.
We've got an unboxing. The floppy disk.
48 floppy. It'll be so fun. We'll do a whole unboxing.
Yeah. It's by the way, like I said, it's an impressive little package.
It is. Here.
I don't know if I gave this tip the right name, not to get back to the...
See if you can identify this sound.
Okay.
This will be a good challenge for you.
Well, that's like a Windows sound.
It's an OS 2 shutdown sound.
Okay. Right. Like I said, Windows.
Windows OS 2.
Is that warp or does it say the version?
It doesn't say the version. I think it's pre-warp, but I don't know.
I mean, that has a very similar theme to a lot of the Windows shit.
Well, wasn't OS 2 basically, it had Windows in it.
Oh, Leo, you're going to get so much email about this.
Maybe I better not mention.
For a while, yes. The IBM had a license for the Windows up through version 3 point whatever. And
right, 3.1.
Yeah, they did have that subsystem built in, so you can run Windows apps, and then that ended with Windows 95.
And then it sounded like
Star Trek, you know, the original TV series.
There you go. Yeah, because you've got every DVD.
What do you call it? Fight music. You know that they had in Star Trek?
Where they get in the fight?
Yeah, you know, na 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 na.
That's what we need.
That's what we need. That should be the theme song.
Churros.
Conquistador.
Conquistador. Let's get the tip before we lose our entire audience. We're still recording. We're riffing on nothing. it's a riff about nothing. So you think that renaming multiple files in a folder is not the best name?
Yeah, because I'm not even sure that that's what this is. In other words, there are two ways to look at this. You have multiple, let's say, photos that you want to all rename to something. There is a way to do that as well. That's not what this tip is about. What this is a way to rename a file and then quickly move to the next file and rename that, quickly move to the next file.
Oh, that's actually more useful.
Perhaps.
Because you're browsing, you're seeing the photo thumbnails, and you'd like to rename them.
I could actually see an instance. You know, Explorer, for all the advances they've made over the years, is surprisingly unsophisticated in many ways. You know, and one of those ways is the way it renames multiple files. So actually, I think maybe next week I'll talk about that. But this week, what it is you've got a number of files in a folder, let's say, or on your desktop, and you select one to rename it. And you can do that by, you know, selecting it and hitting F2. You can slowly double-click the... you know, the name of the icon there, and you get that selection text that comes up. But when you make the name change, if you want to now go and change the name of the next one, instead of hitting enter at the end, you can hit tab.
Oh.
And as you, once you have any icon selected in this fashion, where you can rename the title of the icon, the name of the icon, you can actually tab. And not only will the next icon be selected, but the text will be selected, so you can rename that one as well. And you can do this, Leo, you could do this all night long.
I think I have. It is the single biggest pain in the butt of a GUI operating system is this kind of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, you know,
I have yet to see a good user interface, a graphical user interface for doing a lot of the file management stuff, which in a text-based interface is very easy to do with wildcards and
I'll write shell scripts sometimes to do that.
Sure. So maybe next week I'll tackle the one where you want to rename a bunch of stuff. But actually, that's going to require a software of the week, because the way Windows does it is so horribly broken. Right. I can't imagine.
Anybody. Right. No. But you should tell people how to do it, so if they have to do it. You know, it's like a Boy Scout.
Yeah.
If he has
to. Now, here's how you have to do it. Don't ever do this.
Right.
Because it's so horribly broken.
But
in the case of photos, we'll actually rename them wrong, which drives me crazy.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I guess we could say Windows LiveWave 3 is the pick of the week for software.
Yeah, that and Zune 3, because both are free.
Yep.
You know, free downloads. And in the case of Zune 3, it's a wonderful digital media management system, regardless of whether you use a Zune device or not. If you're using Windows Media Player right now or iTunes or whatever, this is something else to try. And I think it's a beautiful interface. And like I said, the now playing screen is awesome. It's awesome.
Well, Paul, hard to believe, but we've come to the end of this giant Q-tip battle. And it's time to say so long until tomorrow or next week, whichever comes first.
The Disney music they used to have at the end of, you know, when now it's time to say goodbye.
Now it's time to say goodbye. Is that the giant Q-tip battle?
That sounds like Dragnet. I don't know what that is.
We'll be right back after this word. Yeehaw. So, Paul, I don't know. This show is degenerating.
Okay, Cooter. It was good recording.
Yeah, it was a good recording, everybody. We thank you so much for your time. And we wish you all the best. We'll be back next week. Don't forget, you can catch Paul online. His website, which is much more serious, full of great information, is the Win Super Site. And you'll find it at Supersite. I mean, it's called, actually, it's a Supersite for Windows. You'll find it at winsupersite.com. And, of course, his book, Windows Vista Secrets, which could be out any day now. And he writes...
It should be out very soon. And yes! You can pre-order it on Amazon. And you get some significant savings. I want to say 30%.
Let's get it to number one on day one. Sure. Number one technology book on day one. Easy to do. Pre-order it now. Paul.
Then effect. It could be all downhill from there.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Once you've made number one, you can never, you know, you can never.
I can always say that.
I was number one on Amazon. It's called Windows Vista Secrets by Wiley & Sons version 2, the new edition just out supporting SP1. Also, of course, Windows IT Pro. He's the news director there. And we thank you so much, Mr. Paul Thurrott. We will see you next Friday on Windows Weekly.